Dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashanti Nilayam, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. We are in the month of April 2020, and these are times when so many people are spending more time at home. In a way, we are going through a crisis. We are going through an adversity. But at the same time, this medical emergency worldwide has also created many beautiful opportunities for people. I know of so many Sai devotees and Sai youth spending their time more in satsangs. The number of online satsangs have increased. There are so many groups of devotees who are taking to the study of Sai literature. There are groups of Sai youth and gurus who are doing serious study of Swami's Vahinis. It's really a blessing that in Radio Sai, we have had this opportunity to spend time contemplating on Swami's Vahinis after 108 sessions of discussing the Prema Vahini. We are now in Sandhya Nivarini, and we find a lot of people now finding these sessions in some way useful to get them started on their Shavanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam, on their listening, on their meditation, on their practice of these principles that Bhagwan has so beautifully written. We are only grateful to Swami that He put us onto this path. And in the last few episodes, we have been spending time trying to understand and trying to deeply grasp what is it Bhagwan wants us to understand and implement in our lives in this chapter. Chapter 7, we broke this chapter into various segments, and we have done 7.1, 7.2. In 7.1, we know how Bhagwan as the Bhakta says that I don't have any doubt, and Swami as the God, as Bhagwan, is so happy that there are no doubts, and Swami says, good. If you have no doubts, if no doubt come of themselves, and if you don't entertain any doubt, that is what is purity. And that is what will take you towards one-pointedness, Swami says. And then the devotee says, Swami, I don't have any doubts, but you can just give us those tenets to follow in our lives, which will make us dear and near to you. And that is how Bhagwan lists one after another very beautiful, simple principles for us to follow in our lives. Have the conviction that the one Paramatma is in everyone as the embodiment of love. Just as a body that has no breath is useless and begins to rot and stink within a few minutes, similarly, life without truth is useless and tossed in the turbulence of strife and grief. The spirit of selfless sacrifice is at the heart of all encompassing compassion towards all beings. So we have discussed all these points randomly. I just shared with you a few, and so we were in this process of listening and understanding these tenets. We were in segment 7.3. So let's listen once again to this segment, and in the previous session we spent time understanding point number 27, and today we'll move on to point number 28. So let's listen to what Bhagwan has written first.
15. Try to keep under check the five sins that the body commits: killing, adultery, theft, drinking intoxicants, and meat eating. The sacred life can reach the highest if these can be completely avoided. 16. One must be always vigilant, without a moment's carelessness, against the eight sins that the mind perpetrates: kamam or lust, krodham or anger, lobham or greed, moham or attachment, mada or ego, envy, hatred and pride. Man's primary duty is to keep all these things at a safe distance. 17. When in pursuit of wrong actions, man's mind acts hurriedly. During these times, without allowing the mind to go its way, remember the name of the Lord and attempt to do some good deed or the other. Those who do thus will certainly become fit for the grace of the Lord. 18. First, give up the evil tendency to feel envious at the prosperity of others and the desire to harm them. Be happy that others are happy. Sympathize with those who are in adversity and wish for their well-being. This is the sign of God's love present in you. 19. Patience is all the strength that man needs. 20. Those who aspire for happiness must be engaged in good deeds. 21. It is easy to conquer anger through love, attachment through reasoning, falsehood through truth, bad through good, and greed through charity. 22. Do not respond to the words of the wicked. It is good to keep them at a distance. In fact, do not have any relationship with such people. 23. Seek the company of good men, even at the cost of your honor and life. However, pray to God to bless you with the discrimination needed to distinguish between the good and the bad. You must also endeavor to do this with the intelligence given to you. 24. No doubt, those who conquer kingdoms and earn fame in the world are hailed as heroes. But truly, those who have conquered the senses must be acclaimed as the conquerors of the universe. 25. The results of one's action, whether good or bad, continue to always pursue man. 26. Greed yields only sorrow. Contentment is best. There is no happiness greater than contentment. 27. The evil manipulations of the mind has to be uprooted, else it will ruin life itself. 28. Bear with fortitude both loss and grief, and search for that which will benefit you and grant you joy. 29. When you are invaded by anger, practice silence or remember the name of the Lord. Do not remind yourself of things which will inflame the anger more. That will do incalculable harm. 30. From this moment, avoid all bad habits. Do not delay or postpone. They do not contribute the slightest joy or happiness.
So that is what Bhagwan has given to us in segment 7.3. As I said before, in the previous session, we were discussing point number 27, the evil manipulations of the mind has to be uprooted, else it will ruin life itself. Moving on, Swami says in point number 28, bear with fortitude both loss and grief, and search for that which will benefit you and grant you joy. Now, if you go to the definition of who is truly devoted to the Lord, if you go to the letter that Bhagwan had written way back in 1947 to his brother, if you read the lives of saints and analyze what they have gone through in their life, if you closely study the sadhana that Swami has put through to so many devotees who were near and dear to him over these years, who had the opportunity of physical proximity, you will find all of them went through this process of developing that fortitude, no matter joy or grief, no matter pain or pleasure, how to not be rattled and maintain that equanimity, how to rise above the crests and troughs of life. If you are a devotee, if you know Swami, it is not as if there will not be problems in your life. Problems will always be there because that is part of our existence on this planet. But how affected we are, how protected we are, and how insulated we are from these problems is what defines and measures our closeness to divinity. Many of us know about Phyllis Crystal, a very blessed devotee of Bhagwan, who has written the beautiful book Sai Baba, The Ultimate Experience, and many other books, and who guided a lot of devotees on their spiritual path. And she was someone who had very beautiful moments of physical interactions with Bhagwan. Once when she was with Bhagwan in an interview, Swami looked at all the devotees who were sitting there, and Swami said, "You all walk on such a bumpy road," Swami said. Swami was laughing, and Swami said, "All of you walk on such a bumpy road." And Phyllis Crystal says that we all were very puzzled. We were wondering, what is Swami referring to? And then with a very knowing smile, Swami said, "When everything in your life is running smoothly and it is to your liking, you go up very high." And as Swami said that, Swami raised his arm as high as he could reach above his head to illustrate the point that, you know, when something beautiful is happening in our lives, how we are on cloud nine. And then, with a frown and a look of dejection, Swami continued, "But when something happens that is not to your liking, you go down very low." And now Swami brought his arm down towards the ground, almost touching the ground. And as Swami did this, Swami was looking at everyone's reaction. And then Swami did this multiple times, raised his hand up and down several times in a sweeping motion, like hills and valleys. And then Swami said, "See, what a bumpy road all of you walk on." And then Swami moved his hand in a straight line across from one side to the other and very sweetly and gently said, "Don't go up too high when things go well or too low when they disappoint you. Accept both and walk on a smooth road and be happy." And this is what Swami wants all of us to cultivate. Bear with fortitude both loss and grief. And if we see, this is the training that Swami was giving to so many devotees, so many spiritual seekers who have had the opportunity to work for Bhagwan at close quarters, as well as experience His omnipresence wherever they are. And Swami does not stop with that. Swami says, bear with fortitude both loss and grief. And He says, search for that which will benefit you and grant you joy. In fact, I am reminded of Mr. Wadegaonkar. Mr. Wadegaonkar is one of those devotees of Bhagwan who used to come from Nagpur, and he used to serve in the Prashanti Nilayam Ashram. He was part of every major celebration of Bhagwan because he used to come with a team of volunteers, and it is they who used to do all the sanitation arrangements in the Prashanti Nilayam Ashram whenever Bhagwan organized any conference. Whenever there was a big conference in Prashanti Nilayam, be it during the birthdays or whenever there was a large gathering of devotees in Prashanti Nilayam, it was Wadegaonkar's team who came all the way. And these volunteers were from different parts of India, and it is this team that always did all the sanitation arrangements in Prashanti Nilayam. And if you look at the life of Wadegaonkar sir, his life had the kind of challenges that if you had in your life, you said, people should take care of me. How can I go out and serve? That is how his life was. Very few people know about his contribution. Very few people know about what is behind that contribution. He was the one who was responsible for building 125 temporary bathrooms and $125 doing, and another 100 each inside the ashram. Everything was done in 13 days. There was no one paid, no workmen were hired, no laborer, no mason, no carpenter, no plumber. All the work was done to perfection. And he said, we don't want workers because workers will work for money. But when devotees do it, they serve. They serve with so much of devotion and earnestness. And that is what pleases Baba. And so he used to never have workers. It was always the devotees doing seva. And everything was done for Bhagwan's 85th birthday. And according to Wadegaonkar, sir, this is one of the greatest miracles of Bhagwan during his 85th birthday. And this Wadegaonkar sir, he says, I am a miracle of Bhagwan myself. Clinically, I should not be even walking, let alone working. Since the last 40 years, I remember talking to him sometime in 2015. And he said, since the last 40 years, I am carrying with me a prolapsed disc plus spondylitis. Oh, spondylitis is my friend. And along the way, I picked up rheumatoid arthritis also, my second friend. And you know what? By his grace, now my knee joints are also giving away. And another blessing I have got, my hearing is becoming difficult. And I said, sir, is all these blessings? He said, yes, 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 it is all his grace. This body is not mine. This is his botheration. It may deteriorate or disintegrate as per his will. I am not concerned. From the moment I saw him, I have given myself to his work, and that is how it will be till my last breath. He said, in fact, this is what I prayed to Bhagwan directly many years ago. He used to address Swami as Ma. Ma, grant me this wish, please. I should leave this body serving. Even as I die, I should be engaged in your service. And Swami said, yes. And he says, you don't know how much he has loved me all these years. The reason I am mentioning about Wadegaonkar sir is, Swami says, bear with fortitude both loss and grief. And here is Wadegaonkar, he has all the ailments that one should not be having if you want to do physical work for Bhagwan. And here is someone who for 40 years has done yeoman service to Swami's mission and has God knows how exerted his body to the limits. A body which otherwise is completely broken. In fact, if you go back to his life, in 1969, he heard about Swami. He heard that Shirdi Sai has reincarnated in Andhra Pradesh. And so he thought, okay, I should go and see him. And he came and saw Swami for the first time in 1972. It was the month of July. And when he reached Puttaparthi, he discovered that Swami is in Anandpur. So the new building of the college was to be inaugurated in Anandpur. And he went there, and that was a beehive of activity in that campus. So many were working voluntarily in preparation for the big day to be presided over by the President of India. And he saw that so many people are working with so much dedication. They are serving Swami with so much love, and he felt that all these people who are doing this service, they are so close to Baba, because Baba is continuously coming, he's talking to them, and he felt that maybe Baba likes people to serve. And so he immediately joined that group, and they also started working every day along with the volunteers. And he didn't have any accommodation to stay in Anandpur, so they used to stay in the veranda of some house a little away from the campus. The inconveniences didn't matter, because every day Swami used to come during darshan, and Swami used to grant his wife Padmanabhaskaram. Every day it used to happen. And his wife was so thrilled. His wife actually became more attached to Swami than him. And Wadegaonkar sir thought that, you know, whatever is needed to attain Swami, I have to do this. And he was slowly getting convinced that seva is best way to become closer to Swami. So when Swami returned to Puttaparthi, he too followed. The ashram had very few rooms then and very minimal facilities. People used to go to Chitravati for their morning routine, and outside the Ganesh Kit there were only washerman stalls there. So in spite of all these limitations, he liked the ashram. He had no doubt on Bhagwan's divinity from whatever he had seen and experienced. He accepted Swami as easily as he had accepted Shirdi Sai. He says, it was just very spontaneous. It was a spontaneous knowing. Now the whole thing was how to become close to Baba, how to become close to Swami. And so he got involved with the activities of the Satya Sai organization. And still that urge was there, what to do so that, you know, I can also become close to Swami. So he came back to Puttaparthi in Guru Purnima of 1973. And Swami very kindly granted an interview. This was the first time Swami was speaking to him. He was part of that group. At the end of this session, everything in his mind got sorted. Whatever was there in his mind, during the course of that interview, Swami had addressed everything. And he had decided that I have to just be with Swami. And now, the most beautiful thing that happened was that there was a complete turnaround in his approach towards Swami. Earlier he was thinking that what should I do to get closer to him? He felt there are so many people who are running after God. What should I do so that I can also run after him and get his grace? This is what he was thinking earlier. And now the perspective changed completely. He said, why should I run out after God? So many people are running after God. I don't know if I can catch him because there are so many people running. So the best thing for me to do is to focus on doing that which will make God run after me. And he was determined to do that which will make God come in search of him and bless him. What is that if I do, God will think of me. God will come running after me. And in the interview, Swami told him, seva karo, do seva. And these two words became the mantra and the mission of Wadegaonkar's life. He became someone who was constantly looking for opportunities to serve, especially in the Prashantinayam Ashram. When he came next year during the Dasara celebrations, he saw that people from Mumbai were doing sanitation work and they were making these temporary toilets and adding a superstructure on it. And he felt no devotees deserve better facilities even if they are temporary. He had worked in the UNICEF as a health educator, so he knew how to go about doing these things. And so he spoke to elders in the ashram about this. And next year, 1975, was the year of the Second World Conference of Sri Satya Sai Seva Organizations. And he got this responsibility of erecting and managing the bathrooms for hundreds of devotees. And he was called during Guru Purnima of that year, 1975, for a preparatory meeting about making these arrangements. But after the Guru Purnima festival was over, suddenly Swami left for Bangalore. And now Wadegaonkar sir did not know what to do. He was in a quandary. He could not even return to Nagpur, because when Bhagwan was leaving Puttaparthi, from the car, Swami raised his hand as if indicating to him that he should wait. And Wadegaonkar sir did not know what to do, how long to wait. So he stayed on in Puttaparthi for 1 or 2 days, and he thought maybe Swami will come back. Swami is gone to Vrindavan. Swami will come back. 1 day over, 2 days over, 3 days over, 1 week over, and there is no chance of Bhagwan coming. And he just continued to stay on and on. It is becoming very difficult for him. You don't know when Swami is going to come, because it was very hard time for him. He had very little resources. He used to save whatever money he used to earn to come to Prashanti. And he had no money. So he used to survive those days in Prashantinilayam every day by eating just one single dosa. Swami did not come after 2 weeks. Swami did not come after 3 weeks. Swami came after 27 days, and every day was very difficult for him trying to survive. And He used to spend his spare time trying to volunteer to help Professor Kasturi in the Sanatan Sarathi office, because the ashram had no people. Professor Kasturi was one person who used to continuously keep working for the Sanatan Sarathi magazines. And so he went one day and he started volunteering there and speaking to Professor Kasturi. And Professor Kasturi was very gentle and very loving to him. He used to very genuinely ask about his welfare. And when he told about his plight to Professor Kasturi, then Professor Kasturi was feeling very sorry for him. In fact, Vade Gaonkar's wife had had a paralytic attack just a year ago. She was more or less confined to the bed, and he had four daughters to raise. And here Swami had left him high and dry in Puttaparthi. He had no money, no one to look after the children there. Wife is in a problem. Swami says, bear with fortitude both loss and grief. And this is what Vade Gaonkar sir was going through. Problems from every direction, uncertainty every single day. Everything seemed dark and dismal. No money, no seva, because no directions about what to do, when Swami is going to come. And so many problems there. Looking after his domestic life. So when he narrated all this to Professor Kasturi, Professor Kasturi very lovingly consoled him and said, don't be so dejected. Things will get better. And then Professor Kasturi said, see, my wife too is down with paralysis. And saying this, Professor Kasturi next day took him to his own room. And Vade Gaonkar sir saw that Professor Kasturi's wife himself is bedridden. She was bedridden for so many years. But the moment Vade Gaonkar sir went to Professor Kasturi's house, Mrs. Kasturi started shedding tears. She said, oh my God, you're so young, your wife must be so young, and she's bedridden, I heard she's bedridden. I know what it is to be bedridden, what kind of a suffering it is. I can't imagine her plight, and that too, she has four children to raise. And she started crying, thinking about the condition that Vade Gaonkar and his wife have to go through. And Vade Gaonkar sir, because Swami had indicated that wait, he just waited and waited. Waited for 3 weeks, waited for close to 4 weeks, and Swami came on the 27th day. Then Professor Kasturi, whose heart had really gone out for him, for Vade Gaonkar sir, he made bold and he told Swami that, Swami, this person is waiting for you to get direction about this preparatory arrangement for birthday. And Swami said, yeah, I know, ask him to come and sit in the veranda. And when Vade Gaonkar sir sat in the veranda, Swami came straight to him and Swami said, am I not there with you? Why do you worry? Everything will be fine. I will look after you. I will look after you. And that is how Vade Gaonkar sir went back to Nagpur absolutely spirited and delighted, and he started making preparations for the World Conference. He returned in August 1975 to demonstrate an action plan to Swami, and Swami was very happy with the agenda and blessed him to go ahead. And he was promptly back again in October to start the work assigned. And he says, one incident I can never forget that happened during that time one evening they were all working near the canteen gate. It was the time of Diwali. And even as they were working, mentally he told Swami, Ma, will you not give me sweets on this occasion? Today is Diwali. If I was at home, then there would be a lot of celebration. And he says, just a few minutes later, there was one boy standing right in front of him with a vessel full of laddus. And he says, Swami has sent this for you. Vade Gaonkar says, life is full of such instances. Swami says, bear with fortitude both loss and grief and search for that which will benefit you and grant you joy. And Vade Gaonkar sir has done exactly that. He searched for that which will benefit him and grant him joy. Searched for that which will fill him with lasting happiness. He found that in service. He found that in dedicating himself to Swami's mission. Search for that which will benefit you and grant you joy. And he has been swimming in waves of joy for so many years. Even now, he does not miss an opportunity to serve. Even after Bhagwan left his physical frame, he was the one who used to come with his team and they used to relay the roads inside the ashram. Even now, his team comes and works for any major festival in Prashantinilayam. Search for that which will benefit you and grant you joy. He searched, he found, and he relished and made most of that opportunity. In fact, I'm reminded of something very beautiful that Miss Joy Thomas writes in her book, Life is a Challenge, Meet It. Many years ago, when she was recovering from an illness, there was a meeting of Sai devotees which was to be held in a nearby city. She definitely wanted to go, but she was unable to. And she says it is not as if her inputs in that meeting would greatly help the organization or anything of that sort. But it was just that desire to be part of that meeting. One of the hymns that she always enjoyed singing during her childhood is, Father, where thine own children are, I love to be. Father, I want to be there where your children are. So it is just the feeling of we want to be amongst the devotees. We want to be with the people who are doing your work. And so that was the desire. But for some reason she could not attend the meeting. And she was thinking that Swami will be with them, you know, when they are planning for such beautiful work for his mission. But at the same time she thought, no, Swami is with me also. And mentally she asked Swami, can you please show me what you want us to do to improve the organization? Tell me, Swami, what needs to be done? She kept praying. And she was someone who should get these messages from Swami. So she just kept praying, sitting at her home, Swami, tell me what I should do for the organization. And she says, I got a very distinct thought or a message that was very different. You know, it was not me. I just had that feeling it was not me. A message was coming from within, turn on the television. And she was not someone who should really watch television much. Not in the habit of really turning on the set, especially on Sunday mornings. And she thought, no, maybe this is not the thing. Maybe I'm just getting this thought from not some proper mind frame. But she closed her eyes and again she meditated and this is what the message that came again. Turn on the television. And so now she went and did that. She switched on and she saw a well-known minister was speaking. And that minister in the church was talking about the counseling that he did for one of his parishioners. And how he had told that person who was in need of message from the Lord that you must move from success to significance. He had prayed to God, the minister prayed to God, saw, God, tell me what I should tell this person. And he got in a moment of inspiration these words. And he told that person, you must move from success to significance. So these are the words he had told to that person who wanted some guidance and help. And when Mrs. Joy Thomas heard these words, this sentence, she puts on the television and she hears this sentence, you must move from success to significance. And that really struck a chord. What is Swami trying to tell me? She thought. She really felt Swami's presence very palpably. And she continued to listen to the minister. And the minister then related the story of a young man who had yearned to be a surgeon. The minister said how this person had worked hard to get through the medical school and all the struggles that he went through as a young doctor before he established himself as an extremely successful surgeon working in Bel Air in California. And with time he had earned a reputation. He was financially well off because all his patients were from very wealthy backgrounds. And now that he had very good hands and very good name, soon he had enough wealth. Materially he was really doing very good, but somehow something was not fine and he was not happy. He had everything that he had ever thought that he wanted, but somehow he was not happy. And one day, just suddenly, without any warning, he closed his office and he joined a medical team leaving for Vietnam. And this minister, by some fortuitous circumstance, was privileged to observe the surgeon's practice in Vietnam on one busy day. So what happened was a woman came into the glass-roofed shack where these medical services were being provided for the villagers in Vietnam. And this lady was obviously in distress and she wanted to see a doctor. And this surgeon examined her. And the doctor said that you need immediate surgery. And the lady said that, well, she is not ready for the surgery because she cannot afford. And the surgeon then said, if we don't get you operated, then you may not live. She may not live for long. And then the surgeon said, okay, you tell me. I know you cannot afford, but how much can you pay? And then this lady, she held up a small bent coin worth only a few pennies. And she said that that is all she had, that she could pay. Anything that can be done with that money, she was okay. And the surgeon then smiled, took the coin, examined it and said, ah, this is exactly how much I had planned to charge you. This coin is perfect. So with this money, I think I can definitely do the operation for you. And so he went through the careful preparations, giving this poor lady all the possible care as it was possible in the circumstances there in Vietnam. he tried to give her the care that he would want to give even to a millionaire, everything that was possible in the situation there. The operation took several hours. And after closing the incision and seeing the comfort of the patient, now that the patient was stable, the surgeon and this minister, they sat down together. And the minister expressed his joy in being able to watch the operation. Generally, you don't get this chance because it was all done in the temporary setup there. The minister could watch the operation. That would definitely not be possible in the United States. And as they started talking, the minister asked the surgeon, what made him to give up his successful practice and come all the way to Vietnam to do this work under such primitive conditions? And the surgeon replied, when I performed an operation with assistance and the most modern equipment, I relied on that equipment and human skills for the success of the procedure. I also expected the rewards from my work, and these rewards increased my bank account. But minister, when I work here with little or no help and with very limited equipment, I have learned to rely on God instead of myself. I have learned to depend on Him. As I scrub, I begin to pray, Lord, let me be your instrument. Use me for the benefit of this patient. I surrender the results to you. He said, minister, when I work in California, there I had success, but I used to think that I was the doer. But now, when I work here, I so much have the feeling that I am God's instrument. And I have that feeling that He is the doer. And that has added true significance to my life. I have found my life's true significance. And this is the journey from success to significance. When Mrs. Joy Thomas heard this on the television that morning, she thanked Swami for making that minister and that surgeon instruments to give her such a powerful message. She prayed that as she works in the organization, she should always remember that she is an instrument. That she should never ever think that she can achieve anything on her own. How foolish and how empty such a feeling truly would be. How meaningless it would be to think that she can do something for the organization. All she has to do is to only pray that she becomes His instrument and never look for rewards, but gratefully dedicate all praise, blame, success, grief, sadness, everything to Him. Because He is the only doer, everything belongs to Him. And Joy Thomas says, as we surrender our sense of responsibility and give up the desire to be the doer, we become His instruments. Then our lives become truly significant. In fact, Bhagwan, while speaking to all the devotees during the 5th World Conference in the Hillview Stadium on November 24, 1990, Swami said, never give up the organization. Regard it as the breath of your life. Having this firm resolve, become exemplary leaders. This is my sole desire. Swami's love will accompany you everywhere. Swami has not only told us what to do, Swami has created environments for us to practice what He wants us to learn, what He wants us to imbibe and implement in our lives. Bear with fortitude both loss and grief, like how Wadegaonkar sir and so many have done, continue to do. And they inspire us through their lives, through their journey to Swami. And they teach us how to search for that which will benefit you and grant you joy. Just how this surgeon found, just how Wadegaonkar ji found. If we pray, if we don't get rattled by the loss and grief, even as now the world is going through this crisis brought by Corona, if we don't allow this to disturb us and still search for that what will benefit us, search for that which will add significance to our lives and spend the time to cultivate that, then we would have used this opportunity to make strides in our journey towards lasting happiness. These are actually beautiful moments for those who are looking for time, looking for place to concentrate on Bhagwan. Today we have so much time to concentrate on Bhagwan. If you want to meditate, you need time, you need place, and you need interest. Today, as all of us are at our homes, spending more time, not stepping outside, time is plenty now. But all we have to do is make our mind empty and focus on a form that is most dear, a form that spontaneously erupts all love from our heart and removes all fear. To meditate, what you need is place. Now we are not traveling. We are all at home, relaxing. We can choose a quiet place and we can fix that spot, a place where the mind can be made still, like the steady water inside a steady pot. And what also matters when you meditate, apart from time and place, is interest. The intensity of our interest will decide the quantum of our ecstasy. The more the interest, the more the ecstasy. And the more the ecstasy, the more closer we are to divinity. And this will become our beautiful journey to sublimity. So let us search for that what will benefit us. It could be seva. It could be surrender. It could be meditation. It could be anything. But it has to be something that gives us not temporary but permanent joy. And that is what Swami is saying. No matter what comes in your life, bear with fortitude both loss and grief, but search for that which will benefit you and grant you joy. So let us search for that which will add meaning to our lives. And let us make use of these moments to march on this journey. We may not get this time again. We may not get this opportunity again. Before the opportunity slips, let's grab it and let's use it to bring a lasting difference in our life, to bring a new dimension in our journey to Swami. So dear listeners, this is what Bhagavan has written in point number 28 of Sandhya Nivarani, chapter 7. As I always say, we can never do justice to everything that Bhagavan has written to explain. We are nobody to explain, nobody to interrupt. We are only trying to just read again and again to see what message that Swami is giving us, how we can implement in our lives. And this is a journey that each one of us is doing in our own ways. As we do this, let us hold each other's hand as we support and encourage and take each other along in this journey, because together the journey will be beautiful. As Swami says, from I to we to He. If you have any comments, suggestions, any insights, any experiment that you have done, please feel free to share with us. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. You can also send us your comments on our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Gratefully offering this session at His lotus feet, we bring this day-long Thursday life to a close. Thank you so much for being with us. Sairam.